It's all lies.
Well, on that note, welcome to Notorious Women Podcast. I'm Lavetta.
And I'm Miriam.
And this is Notorious Women, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
That's right.
Okay. Miriam, despite what you think, I don't think you're a mess. I think you are lovely and wonderful.
Wow, Lavetta, you're so nice to me. Thank you.
That's what friends are for.
I know, right? Thank you. Lavetta, you're not a mess at all, just so you know. Like,
I would agree with that.
You are so, like, when I'm in chaos mode, like, Lavetta and I talk to each other a lot. I don't know if y'all know it, but you probably can tell. But Lavetta is just this calm, like, she'll take a breath and she'll, like, figure it out. I don't do that. I don't know.
It's all lies. My facade is working. No, I'm like the duck. On the surface, it looks calm, but underneath, it's like it's going like a mile a minute.
Okay.
I told you,
but you're a cute duck
and brain. Should we get started?
Yeah, we should probably get started.
Yeah, that is the secret of life. That's the secret of life, to be pinky and the brain. I'm just saying.
I mean, kind of. I like it. Yeah. Also, they're funny. So, you know.
Oh, my God. Did you ever see the episode when they broke up?
Oh, yes, so I did. It was hilarious. They can't live without each other. It's the most beautiful love story, honestly.
I love it.
I introduced my kids to Animaniacs. And they love it, too. Yeah. Aww. I was like. But now that they love it, but they also see it as like mom's favorite. That's like mom's show.
Oh, it's one of those. Yeah. And then when they get older, then they'll look back and be like, actually, that was really good.
Well, honestly, it's one of those shows. Then they'll look back and be like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
Because it's brilliant in that way. Like totally appropriate for kids. But like there are jokes in there they're just not going to get.
Right. But that's like the beauty of like the adult, you know, animation that's for adults and children, you know, kind of like what Pixar has like mastered.
Oh my God.
You know, you can watch it and then later on you watch it and you're like, oh, I get it now when you're older, but you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So I believe I am first this week and my notorious woman this week, Miriam, is Merle Oberon.
Okay.
Do you know who that is?
I just feel like that's a familiar name, but I don't.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with no clue. I do. Do I? Okay. Go on. Curious.
Okay. So this is going to be interesting. This is going to be good. So Merle Oberon was born Estelle Merle O'Brien Thompson on February 19th, 1911.
Okay.
Now, most of us know her as a British actress who began her film career in British films such as Anne Boleyn, in The Private Life of Henry VIII from 1933, then in The Scarlet Pimpernel from 1934, and also, but most famously, in Wuthering Heights, the 1939 adaptation of Emily Bronte's a novel of the same name, alongside Laurence Olivier.
Shut up, I've seen it.
Yes.
I've seen that movie.
Yes, of course you have, because you're a nerd like me.
Yeah.
Nerds unite.
Oh my God, we're the same.
That's so nerdy.
That's really nerdy. Okay. Yeah,
so most of us know her from that. And then when she came to the United States, to Hollywood, that is, her major film debut was in The Dark Angel in 1935, for which she was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actress, but lost out to Betty Davis. I mean,
I love me some Betty Davis. Say that.
Come on. Like, I love Betty Davis so much, I can forgive her for being in, what's that movie where she's playing a Southern woman debutante is Jezebel. She's on a plantation.
Nope.
Because one thing Hollywood loves in the 1930s.
Oh, yeah.
Is a story set on a plantation. I tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's their favorite. And like a white lady who is too hot. She's too hot and needs so much help. And we are to feel for her. Yes. We are to. That is where our empathy shall lie, with this white woman who is overheating.
While living in the big house on a plantation. And all her problems. Now, the only.
So many problems.
I mean, it's hard overlooking the niggers in the. In the surrounding areas, why they work to death.
Sometimes you tell them what to do and they don't do it as quickly as you want them to. It's very stressful.
As I sit on my porch and drink my sweet tea. Okay. It's so funny. I hate Gone with the Wind, of course, but the only like homage to that I like is the one from Carol Burnett. You ever see that classic one?
Yes. The curtains. The drapes. Yes. Honestly, I don't know if it's worth watching the movie for 4 hours, but it might be just for that clip.
No, I mean, just watch, go on YouTube and watch that clip on the Carol Burnett show of them reenacting.
It is the win. Yeah, it is the funniest thing. Oh my God. I love Carol Burnett. God.
I love her for that because every time I think about Gone with the Wind, I think of that image instead of the actual movie.
Like she fixes it for you. That's excellent.
Oh my God, it's great.
I remember watching that movie in high school and being like, am I supposed to like this? I remember being confused. Who am I supposed to feel sorry for? I'm very confused. But that was, you know, me. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like when you watch old Woody Allen movies or not so old Woody Allen movies and his girlfriend is 16 and you're like,
Am I like rooting for this relationship? I don't know that I am. Am I supposed to be? I feel like I'm not, though, you know.
No,
I'm not.
So Merle is so now you know who I'm talking about. So,
right. Yes. Right. Absolutely.
Yes. So that is what most people knew about her until around like the 80s. Okay. Now, because she died in 1976, I have it in here somewhere, but because I'm going to tell this in like a non-traditional, non-linear way.
Okay.
So that is Merle Auberon. That, you know, for a long time, that was her legacy. And, you know, we're like, oh, she's one of the classic Hollywood actresses.
Yes,
but
that's what I know.
What makes her notorious, and the reason I'm covering her on this podcast, Notorious Women Podcast, don't forget to subscribe and tell your friends about us. Back to
smash,
the story.
As my children like to say, because they watch a lot of YouTube, smash that subscribe button. Did I do that right? Did I say that right?
Yes.
Okay, yes. I practiced.
Yeah.
Smash it, you guys.
Smash it.
I'm old.
Now, what makes her, what makes her notorious is this, it's her backstory.
Okay.
So when she arrived in Hollywood in the 30s, the story that was told was that she was born in Tasmania, Australia, to author Terence O'Brien Thompson, a British mechanical engineer from Darlington, and his wife, Charlotte Selby, a Eurasian woman.
Okay.
But that her records had been destroyed in a fire.
Mm.
So 1930s America, we're like, she's obviously British lady. Okay, I don't know where, like, Ceylon is. I don't know. Okay, Australia. Oh, okay, there's white people in Australia. Okay, yeah. Okay.
She doesn't make me feel uncomfortable at all.
At all.
That's fine.
But after her death, the real story behind her identity and her real life came to light. And now just keep in mind, in context, everybody lied about their background in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah. 100,000%.
It was the job, actually, of the studios. They have a whole PR, you know, department to change your name, you know, to, you know, move your hairline back, to color your hair, whatever they need to do in order to make you into, let's say, they need hunks. They need the fiery heroine. They need, you know, they need a Betty Davis. They need a, you know, Joan Crawford. They need whatever they need for their particular studio. Because this is when the studio system was in full effect and you signed a contract with the studio and they paid you weekly.
Yes.
And so everybody lied about their background, right? That was expected.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
So the fact that when Merle's actual background came to light, it was shocking. Not really shocking to us in the modern day, but back then you can understand why she hid a lot of the stuff that she hid. Okay, so according to a documentary from 2014 called The Trouble with Merle, it was later found out that, so the woman that traveled with her mostly,
okay,
was a darker skinned woman, that she had a darker skinned woman that was her maid. That woman turned out to actually be Charlotte, her mother.
I knew it. Well, right? I knew it 4 seconds before you said it, but 5 seconds I didn't know it, but 4 seconds I did. Wow. Okay.
Was her mother, and her mother was of East Indian descent.
Oh.
I mean, East Asia Indian descent, right?
Okay.
So, but later on, another secret would come out.
Okay.
Charlotte was not Merle's mother.
What?
Okay. Charlotte was Merle's grandmother.
Oh, hey.
Wow. And Charlotte was actually raised alongside her mother as her sister.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but let's just tackle these separately. Okay.
Okay.
So
okay,
the background is, yes. So the background is basically in the 80s, actually, the nephew of her first husband did some research and he found, actually, no, I'm sorry. Back up. So actually in the 80s, one of her distant relatives went and did some research on her and found her birth certificate that she was born in Mumbai, India.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And she, so again, the woman that she said was her mother, Charlotte, she traveled with Charlotte. Everyone had met Charlotte. No one really had met Constance because Constance had been sent estranged from both her mother and her daughter, basically.
Wait, Constance is who? The grandmother? Wait, no.
Charlotte is the grandmother purporting to be the mother.
Right.
Constance is her real mother.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. Now, according
I need like lines and graphs here, but I can do
this. I know. But one of the reasons they hid it, for several reasons, but they hid, so Charlotte hid the fact that Merle was Constance's daughter is because Constance gave birth to Merle when she was only 12 years old.
Oh, God. Ugh.
Which was a result of rape.
Oh, my God.
Which she, Charlotte, had also been raped. And Constance was the result of that rape.
Motherfucker. I'll say it. Jesus. Stop raping people.
Yeah.
My God. Ugh. Children. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Charlotte had given birth to Constance because she was raped at the age of 14 by an Anglo-Irish foreman on a tea plantation.
You know,
yeah.
You know, stop invading countries. It's bad. Cool.
I mean, this is the result of colonization of India, right?
Yeah.
So at the time, again, further context, Merle would be considered Anglo-Indian. Now, Anglo-Indians are basically the offsprings of British men, either exploiting relationships with the local Indian and Sri Lankan women, or outright rape.
Yeah.
And so, unlike today, and it's still hard for biracial people in a lot of ways, depending on where they live, but especially back then in the teens, right? So, colonization is at its height in India and in the East in general. And so, sometimes if the Indian girls were lucky, they were able to enter into a relationship that at least they were able to benefit somewhat financially from,
right,
or to have that their children could benefit from. But again, if they were raped, then oftentimes that was not a choice that they were given. And then on top of it, the offsprings were not considered really Indian, so they couldn't advance in Indian society. And then, of course, they can't. I mean, they're not white, so the British are like, but you're not white.
Oh my God. Stop raping women now.
And
I keep saying this. No one's listening.
And to make matters even more complicated, Charlotte, who's the grandmother, is darker skin. So she's obviously, she can't pass,
Okay.
It doesn't say. I couldn't find out. Constance probably is lighter too, but Merle was very light.
Okay.
Okay. But even so, the backstory that we hear is that, so remember I told you all about, like, she was in Anne Boleyn and Private Life of Henry VIII and da da da.
Right.
And that backstory, and she was born in Tasmania, that was crafted mainly by her first husband, Alexander Korda.
Okay.
Who was the producer and of the Anne Boleyn. He basically discovered her in England.
Okay.
And so when she came to the States, again, everybody has a backstory. They make it up. People do today even. So.
Oh, it's true.
But that was to, and so they kind of used Tasmania because Americans didn't travel. Well, I mean, kind of like today. They didn't know, but they knew Australia. They knew that white people were in Australia. And that could exclude a little bit of, like, the exoticness that they could kind of detect in her.
She's white, but she's, you know, Tasmanian white. That's fine.
Yeah. Okay. So Alex and Merle.
Stupid. All right.
Well, they needed a story. So Alex and Merle, they basically passed Merle off when she came to Hollywood as an upper class girl from Hobart who had moved to India after her father died in a hunting accident.
Oh, that sounds very white. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Right. The whole hunting.
That's like blindingly white. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes.
It's like translucent white. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And correction here. So they found her. So her nephew found her records in. It turns out he wasn't her nephew. He was. Anyway, it turned out that he found her records. He tracked down her birth certificate in a Bombay, British India records department.
Okay.
So he thought he was her nephew, but it turns out he was just her half brother.
Okay.
Because then he also, that's when he found out about the Charlotte and Constance switch as well. So a lot of stuff. Now I'm not really sure if Merle was aware that her mother was her grandmother. I can't quite figure out if she was aware of that.
Okay, that was my question. That did they ever tell her who her mother was and what happened?
I mean, no. It could be she found out because her half-brother, nephew, you know, actually tried to reach out to her later in life in Hollywood and she refused to see him. And partly because maybe she was afraid that she'd be outed as half Indian or not, but I'm kind of unclear about that. But what is clear is that she knew that she was not white.
Yeah. Okay? I mean, the woman raising her was darker and she was in India. So,
yeah,
I mean, yeah.
Now with her background fully obscured though, but because she was able to obscure it pretty, you know, for the most part, pretty successfully, she was able to enter into Hollywood and be considered a leading lady because only white women could be considered as leading ladies.
What?
And that's why technically she's the first Asian woman, an Indian woman to be nominated for an Oscar, but it's complicated.
I was going to say, does that count? How does that work? What do you think?
I know. I mean, we would count it, but it's misleading is what I'm going to just say.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing though. I don't know. Like, we live in a fucked up world and she comes from a fucked up situation.
Exactly.
She's, girl, get your money, do your thing, do it. I'm not here to stop you. You know, yeah. I don't know.
Now, also, so I'm just going to go through the Hollywood kind of thing, just kind of talk about that. And then I'll go back to like the real, real thing. So it's kind of like we're playing
drama.
What we think is the drama. And then I go into the melodrama. So when she arrived in Hollywood, she signed with Samuel Goldwyn's company. And again, it's all about getting that studio contract because he needed a star. He needed a star like Bette Davis.
And she was I'm here. And he was like,
yeah.
Okay,
and she,
good.
You know, she had been in Anne Boleyn. She had played Anne Boleyn.
Yeah,
and, you know, and she and Korda was well respected in British entertainment industry. So, you know, they're thinking she's going to be another Vivian Lee. She's going to be, you know, the Brits are coming over, right? So,
yeah.
But there was something, again, that even on screen, you couldn't really see in person, but they said on screen because it highlights everything you could kind of tell. And even in the Scarlet Pimpernel.
Oh yeah.
She occasionally her accent would slip, and reporters in Hollywood would kind of acknowledge that there was something Orientalism about her, because Orientals were people back then, not rugs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Orientals are rugs people. They're not people.
They're rugs.
It's Asian people. It's Asian people from Asia. So
so but many they would, PSAs, so little time. Go on.
Oh, my God. And so she, so they worked really hard to work on her accent. She also, since a young age, had been using skin lightening creams. Bleaching cream. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which were very prevalent back in India and continue to be very prevalent, unfortunately, today.
That's so sad.
She's in Hollywood. She's working. It all seems to be going well. But then in 1937, she was in a car accident and her face was scarred.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So cinematographer and her future husband, a man by the name of Lucien Ballard, famously developed a technique that lit her in a way that would obscure her blemishes.
Oh.
He created a light, basically, that would like highlight the light in the actor's eyes. And the light was called the Obi.
Do we have him to thank for the ring light? Is that like
probably
OG?
And I forget
light?
What the
thank
Obi.
You.
Yeah. The Obi also is, I forget what they call it now. I think it's like the. I'm not a tech person, but yes, that okay. The idea of the ring light, it stems from this idea, and it was called the Obi after her.
Oh my God. The yeah. Obi?
The Obi.
Oh, cause, okay.
Her last Oberon, name. You know.
Yeah. So. Got it. I'm with you now. Go on.
Some sources say that the technique was also a way to further whiten her face before the camera.
Mm.
You know. Because she was always, even though the lie was, you know, being concealed and it was seemingly working because she was working in Hollywood, she was always feared that it would come out. So did you see that movie Passing?
I did not see it.
Okay, you should see it. It's based on Nella Larsen, an American novelist. She wrote it, I think it's in the 20s. It's written, and it's. You know, Black people are very familiar with the idea of passing. And it's a tragic thing that people used to have to do that. But oftentimes people who pass, they have to cut off all contact from their community, yeah. But also their family.
There is a brilliant novel I just read, and I can't remember the name of it. I will find the name. Maybe I'll put it. We'll put it in show notes. It's so good. And it is about. It's about twin sisters, one of whom can pass and one of whom can't.
Mm,
and, yeah. You know, hilarity ensues there. It's also really interesting. What I like is that it kind of like opens the door to the world of Los Angeles. Everyone thinks of LA and California as being very, very liberal and very, very open. No, y'all, like we didn't let Black people on beaches, like not yep. that long ago. Santa Monica was not, you couldn't go on the beach. So like, I just like, it's very enlightening to think like I family from here. I was like, what was it like? Do you even remember? You know, it's fascinating. Anyways, yeah. That was a tangent. I don't even know the name of this really good book. I don't, but I read it. I'll come back to you with it.
Yeah. Maybe you can come back on IG and tell people about it.
I will. I'll do that.
Yeah. Again, everything's going well. And in 1942, her husband, so she's still married to Alex at this time, he was knighted for his contributions to the war effort in England. Became lady.
I don't know. That's my British response to being knighted. Ho, ho, ho. That feels more French. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll stop talking. Cool, cool.
She became Lady Corda. Now, imagine yes. that. An Indian awesome. Woman, a mixed race Indian woman. Becoming a lady in British society.
Yes. I mean, she had to dupe them, but still, I will take it.
Yeah. In 1949, in 1945, she and Corda divorced, and she married Lucien, the one who created the light. Now, by all accounts, Korda was not happy about this. He really wanted to keep his marriage together, even though it was purported that Merle was out here spreading her love around. Let's put it nicely. she was out here getting her freak on. He didn't seem to mind that as much. And she wasn't the only one, by the way. Back in old Hollywood, everybody was fucking everybody. I don't know what they were doing. But
what's the podcast where you must remember this?
Yes.
Damn. Which is,
yes. You Must Remember This is a phenomenal podcast. I highly, highly, highly recommend it. And it's one of my sources from today, as as Wikipedia. Yeah. Okay. Everybody was fucking everybody. So, but Korda still wanted to keep his marriage together, but, you know, and not only just in her heart and in her bed, Merle had moved on. And so she married, Lucien, but that would only last for a couple years. She would divorce Lucien in 1949.
Oh, wow. That was quick.
Yeah. Now, in 1957, she married an Italian-born industrialist. So this is a rich guy named Bruno Paglia. Bruno Paglia. And they adopted two children. Now, at first, she was always shy of having children for fear that the children would come out dark and give away. And that's another thing that people who are passing have to worry about. Mm-hmm. But she had, you know, decided, okay, because Paglia was obviously, you know, he's Italian. Italians didn't become white people until, not yet. But, and also he was actually born in Italy, so he had an accent, but he was like successful in life and proud. So she thought, okay, you know, but when she tried to start conceiving, she found out that she had been given an hysterectomy against her will. Like, she didn't even know it.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah, for a procedure earlier. She'd gone in for another procedure and they just took her uterus.
Wait a minute. How old was she?
She's very young. I think they used to do that before with women.
I mean, with women of color, there's a huge, awful history of that.
With women of color, but I think in with women that were deemed white as well, I think that was really something that they just used to do to women. In my research, it says that it probably happened when she was still in England. But yeah, she was like, what? So that goes out the window.
I don't understand. Like, why? What was the, who directed it? Does that make sense?
We forget that we've only had female gynecologists probably in the last, 40 years. Like, it used to be the majority old men who decided what a woman did with her body. No matter what.
Damn, I'm getting angry right now. It's building up inside of me. Damn. Yeah, men, stop it. You know?
Just terrible.
Now you could sue the shit out of that doctor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, in 1973, she met, then married, a 36-year-old Dutch actor by the name of Robert Walters while they were filming a film called Interval.
Okay.
She met him in 1973 and they got married in 75, but he was 25 years her junior.
Okay, girl, you get it. You're a queen. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. And throughout her life, and again, they say, you know, especially on You Must Remember This, they had a special episode about this, and the historian was saying that, you know, later in her life, she kind of let the facade of her race kind of slip a little bit, but she didn't completely come clean. Like, she would start tanning, like she would never tan before. And again, it was probably her experience with being married to Paglia, and, you know, and then tanning became a thing in the 70s also.
Yeah,
so it's like
true.
She kind of, you know, she kind of like loosened up, and in the 60s of the free love. So she kind of loosened up a little bit, but she never really came clean. And then she would waffle back and forth between coming clean, kind of admitting something that maybe she lied about her background, but not really coming out and saying it plainly.
You know, I will say this about that. Like, I feel like she might, even if she felt like what she had done was, I don't know, wrong, but something she's no longer comfortable with because that's not who she is. And, you know, there, a lot had happened between the 1930s and the 1970s in terms of social acceptance. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure in her head, she thinks it's just too late. That ship has sailed.
It could be that. It's also, you know, internalization of bigotry, that self-hate, which I'm going to get into in a little bit. But the waffling back and forth is just human. Again, she seemed a little bit more comfortable. You know, we can look back in retrospect. But again, Korda's nephew, he wrote a book. And he, like I said, he, along with her actual blood relatives, reached out to her, but she didn't have want to have anything to do with them. But he, when he started doing his research, and also, again, he kind of knew. They kind of knew that her background was a little hazy or what have you. But yeah, after his research, he was going to publish a family memoir called Charmed Lives in 1979. And he was going to include her real birthplace, but she threatened to sue him.
Wow. Okay. All right. You know.
So he took it out. He took it out because he's just like, okay, I respect her, but I don't think she has anything to be ashamed of. But he took it out. So for the rest of her life, until she died in 1979 at the age of 68 from a stroke.
Oof.
And she basically took the complete history of her background to her grave, and she's interred at Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Glendale.
Like, I knew you were going to say that. That's where all the famous people are buried.
That's where all the famous people. Now, let's get into the real story.
Yeah.
Nitty gritty, right? So what I basically told you is kind of what people kind of were whispering about. Because, again, there were always whispers about her identity, and she would always be trying to fight them. And then later in life, she became a little bit more comfortable. But, you know, so in 1983, again, an Anglo-Indian of her Anglo-Indian heritage, it was revealed in a biography by Charles Higham called Princess Merle, The Romantic Life of Merle Oberon. Now, they found, again, her birth certificate in Bombay and her baptismal certificate. They also found letters and photographs of her Indian relatives.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So, again, she was born into a society where the offsprings of English colonizers taking advantage of local Indian girls, either through exploitative sexual relationships or straight out rape. So she was born into a very difficult circumstance. And it's in his research, it's reported that, again, Constance is the mother. Charlotte is the grandmother pretending to be the mother.
Right.
But when Constance was raped and was forced to have when Charlotte was raped and had Constance, she kind of resented Constance, her daughter, which happens, unfortunately, a lot when a woman's raped.
Yeah, I cannot speak to that. You know what I mean? That's a massively traumatic.
Yeah.
That's horrifying.
And she's only 14 when she's raped.
They're both children.
Children. So she basically was not a very good mother to Constance, which has led to their eventual being estranged. So when Constance was raped and had Merle, she oftentimes, that's what happens, she becomes a better grandmother than she was a mother.
Yep.
Yeah. And she started to actually pour all of that love into Merle instead of Constance, which could have led to some jealousy as well.
Oh, yeah. Hunter, she's still a kid.
So Constance leaves eventually. So she moves off and it just becomes Merle and Charlotte living together. And they lived an impoverished life in the shabby flats in Bombay for a few years. But in 1917, they moved to a better circumstance in Calcutta, present day Calcutta.
Okay.
Merle received a scholarship, a foundation scholarship to attend a school, a local school for girls. It's a private school. It's the best private school in Calcutta.
Great.
But while she was there, she was constantly taunted for her mixed race ethnicity, leading her to quit school. So she was bullied out of school.
Ugh, that's awful. People are and awful. She
was just homeschooled. Now, she also first performed in the Calcutta Amateur Dramatic Society.
Okay.
She became completely enamored with films. And around this time, she was just sort of interested in the high life. and she started going to nightclubs. And she also started taking on a posh British accent.
Okay. How old is this child? Is she like a teenager? This is her teen
She's like
years?
A teenager, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that feels right. Yeah. I too had a posh British accent when
exactly.
I was a teenager.
You're fighting really, yourself.
Yeah. I think hers was probably better than mine, but that's besides the point. Okay.
Yeah, well, India was colonized by it's British. True. But so this is also where the skin bleaching cream comes in. I suspect it was probably always around her because it was used everywhere in the area.
Ugh.
Everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. It's just awful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't knock anybody because societal pressure is massive, but stupid that it is massive.
Well, and also, this is also why she internalized. She basically said, according to some researchers, that she internalized at this time that her dark skin was a curse. Dooming her and her mother, her grandmother, to a life of poverty. Because that would seem true in this area, in this time period.
Yeah.
During this time, you know, she worked at nightclubs. She also worked as a phone, a telephone operator, according to Indian journalist Sunanda K. Datta Ray. She worked under the name of Queenie Thompson at this time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And now she would, you know, enter clubs, different contests and stuff, because she's looking for a better life, maybe to get into the equivalent of this today would be getting into modeling and acting, basically.
Right.
Because, you know, it's not going to come through. She's also living in a town where people know kind of her back. They know her background.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So she got into different contests and she was going out for film careers and, you know, she also dating. In 1929, she met former actor Colonel Ben Finney. And they dated for a while and he seemed to like her. But when he saw Charlotte one night at Merle's flat, he realized that Merle was mixed race.
Oh,
so
shit.
He ended the relationship.
What a fucker. Motherfucker.
Again, she's cursed.
Yeah.
Because of her skin color. Yeah. However, he's not a complete douchebag. He did promise to introduce her to Rex Ingram of Victorin Studios if she were prepared to travel to France to
meet
like,
with some. She's like, my bags are packed right now.
Literally, that's exactly what happened. Her and Charlotte were like, we out, bitches.
Okay, bye.
Deuces. So they went to France. But when they got there, of course, Ben being a douchebag for breaking up with her because she's mixed race, he avoided her.
Oh, wow.
But he did leave word with Ingram at the studio.
You know what? So, he can go fuck himself. That's fine. Bye.
I mean, it's fine. Sometimes people are just in your life for a season, which he was.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
So they went to meet Ingram, and Ingram liked her exotic appearance. And he quickly hired her in a film called The Three Passions. And it just as an extra as a party scene. But, you know, she's thinking, okay, I'm in the thick of it. So she was about 17 or 18.
Okay.
Soon after that, she went to England. They moved on to England.
Okay.
Where she worked as a club hostess under the name Queenie O'Brien. So before it was Queenie Thompson.
I was Irish.
I know, right?
Now I'm, what do you want me to be?
It's so funny because only a person who's like an immigrant to a new country is like, no, you should have kept Thompson. Yeah. Like O'Brien's not going to do you no favors in England.
They are not going to like you for now other reasons.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And she played, you know, many roles, small roles and extra roles. And she She's quoted as saying, "I couldn't dance or sing or write or paint. The only possible opening seemed to be in some line in which I could use my face. This was, in fact, no better than a human than 100 other faces, but it did possess a fortunately photogenic quality." Okay. This is what she told Film Weekly in 1939. So now, according to some biographers, again, allegedly, please don't sue us.
Don't sue
Merle
us.
Merle also worked as, she was involved in sex work to make ends okay. meet.
It's not uncommon for women. I know people are like, eh, but like, listen, the world has not given women a whole lot of choices.
They just have a lot of options. Exactly.
And sometimes women need to make a lot of money. Yep. And you fuck up our education opportunities. You fuck up our brains into thinking we can't do things. And yeah, okay, sometimes we need that money and we're going to do what we got to do.
Well, and also she's taking care of Charlotte. So right. She has to take care of both of them. Now, this was also, there was always rumors about this. And in A. Scott Berger's biography of Samuel Goldwyn, he alleged that a night with Merle cost a couple hundred dollars or around $3,000 in today's dollars.
I mean, yes. Make that money. If you want this, it's going to cost you. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Listen, your body, your choice, y'all. that goes for all things.
So within that context, again, she's internalized her dark skin. She's using bleaching cream, which seems to be working. Since she started using this bleaching cream and going out, it seems to be working. So when she arrives in London and she's working, she's spotted one night by Alex Korda, her first husband, and his soon-to-be ex-wife. They were actually out. They were out scouting for his new film, and so they scouted Merle to play Anne Boleyn in that 1933 movie, and that started everything. She was 22 at the time. And like, again, so all that stuff I told you at the beginning, that's how all of that started. But before, she started out in Bombay, you know, in the slums, basically.
Wow.
Then doing the best she can, then going to France and working and, you know, in clubs and, you know, hostesses, maybe doing some sex work there, then going to England, doing the same thing, and then actually getting scouted and getting her first lead, major lead, in this huge film.
I never walked into the correct bar, is what I'm hearing.
Like, yeah, I think so.
I would go to bars and restaurants, but not the right ones, it seems.
But it came at a huge cost because she was living a major lie. And I think I can't stress enough how if people had found out that she was not white, they may have physically attacked her.
Yeah, it wasn't it. You wouldn't have. The risk really wasn't just losing your career. That was almost a given. The risk
she could
was
be.
Being
yeah,
murdered.
We have anti-miscegenation laws on the books. And in Hollywood had the Hays Codes also, which codified that certain ethnicities couldn't play certain things. So an Indian person could not play Indian roles. They would put white people in those roles in brown face. And they also had rules that non-white people couldn't be on screen kissing white people.
Sorry.
That was in the code.
I'm laughing because I'm uncomfortable. I just think that this is a shit world. So it's really, you know, like I don't really pass judgment on her in terms of the choices she made because I don't see a way out of the choices that she made.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And I think that's why we have to give her some grace in this moment. You know, a lot of historians have said that, you know, quote, quote, "Navigating an industry that wasn't designed to accommodate her and producing such moving work while fighting those battles." A lot of historians have said that. And that's actually what they said in the documentary from 2014. You know, they want you to look on this. It's exciting and it's scandalous in a lot of ways, but it's also like she was a human being doing the best she could with the circumstances, right? Yeah. As an actor, that's what you're taught. You play a human being in a given circumstance, right? In that circumstance. And that's what she was doing. She was dealing the card she was dealt. Unfortunately, I think she probably also internalized the self-hate.
Yeah. Yeah. But think about how many years she had to hide.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not a psychiatrist or any of that, but like probably that fucks with your psyche. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
no one said the dark side of you is beautiful. Like not one.
Right.
All she was told was that side of you is shameful. Yeah. Like that's going to get into your soul at some point. And that's, sorry.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sad about her because they kind of won. The colonizers won when they convinced you that they're right, that you are less than. That is the thing that, breaks my heart for her, but she isn't a Hollywood icon for her contributions to the motion pictures. She has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame at 6274 Hollywood Boulevard. And Michael Korda, Alex's nephew, wrote a French novel about her death called Queenie. That was actually adapted into a television miniseries starring Mia Sara, who is actually an Italian-American actress. And F. Scott Fitzgerald's unfinished novel, The Last Tycoon, was made into a television series with Jennifer Beals playing a character called Margot Taft. And many people feel like that's based on Merle Auburn's character.
Interesting. I mean, the only the positive I can take is that we know now, you know, and then we can talk about it and we can understand the history a little better. And I like to think we duped a lot of white people, and that makes me happy.
Yeah, I totally get it. I love that because, you know, there's people have been passing for a long time, right?
Yeah.
And there's room that there's a rumor that what's the president? I think it's Garfield. That Garfield is actually a black man.
Yes. really? So I didn't know that. But
I'm all for for duping the white people. I just wish we could do it and still know that they're wrong. Part of me feels, I hope that, you know, wherever she is, if you believe in afterlife, that she can finally be proud of who she is because, you know, God, the spirits, whomever, the universe made you and you're not wrong. You were made. So you're not wrong.
You're not wrong.
You're not, and your existence is not wrong.
You know? I really think this is a story about what happens when you are shamed, that, you know, I'm not really going to fault her for how she reacted. It's just sad. It's just really, really sad.
It's sad. And so that's Merle Auburn. And my sources today were, again, You Must Remember This podcast with Karina Longworth. You guys should definitely check that out.
It's so
fabulous
good.
Podcast.
So much drama.
Wikipedia and also an article, a couple articles. There's so many out there now, thank God, that we can get her story out there.
There's the positive. There's the gold at the end of the rainbow or the rainbow at the end of the storm. I don't know how these things work, but you know what I'm saying. It's out there now. So now we know.
It's out there now.
I'll get my metaphor straight eventually.
Yeah. And there's also a BBC article by a gentleman by the name of maybe a woman by the name of Meryl Sebastian.
Oh, okay.
You know, there's tons of articles out there. You can just research this, but I feel like I'm glad that she still has gotten her due in Hollywood because she did contribute to Hollywood.
Yes.
And to British cinema. I just wish she could do it on her own terms is all I can
because
say. But that is my notorious woman.
I love Auburn. That. That is amazing. Wow. And here, let's look at that and let's think about how many amazing people we missed out on.
Yep.
Okay. Cause that's what I just heard.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Lavetta. She's amazing.
My pleasure. Who's your notorious woman this week?
So we're gonna switch gears here. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Lavetta, are you ready to murder some Nazis?
Always.
I thought you would be with me on this one.
Die, 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 Nazis, die.
Because it's I'm good with the murdering of Nazis, right? Like, that's fine.
Nazis are bad.
So I got my information to start with history.com and Wikipedia. And they're different phrasings of things. But my notorious woman today is a woman named Freddie Overstegen. Have you ever heard of her?
No.
So I haven't either. I just discovered her and I love her so much. Okay. She was born on September 6th in 1925 in the village of Schoten, Netherlands. So her family lived on a barge. So they lived like on the water. And it said, there's like one line that said before the war, her family had harbored people from Lithuania in the hold of their ship and hidden. I don't exactly know why was happening, but that they did that. Her parents divorced and she was raised by her mother. And after the divorce, they moved to a small apartment and lived in poverty. So her mother considered herself a communist and taught her daughters the importance of fighting injustice, which is like, side note, communism, it just means like, it doesn't mean like what Russia did, because that's not even communism.
No.
Right? That's exactly. Totalitarianism.
Yeah.
Communism, theoretically, is we all work together. Like,
yes, like especially I joke at this time. Yeah.
Right. Like we all work together for the greater good of the whole. That's the idea, right? So if you decide that a few groups of people should be murdered, a communist would be like, nope, that's a bad idea.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So this is like, just a quick hit information here. So when Europe was on the brink of war in 1939, she took Jewish refugees into their home. So Freddie had an older sister. The spelling of her sister's name is T-R-U-U-S, Truce. I'm going to call her Truce until someone writes in and tells me that I'm wrong. But I think it's Truce. And the girls began handing out anti-Nazi pamphlets with their mom. And this attracted the notice, that's how they phrased it, I liked it, of Harlem Council of Resistance Commander Franz von der Weel. I don't know. I'm trying. So by the way, they lived in Harlem. This is the OG Harlem, H-A-A-R-L-E-M.
Not in the United States, Harlem.
Right, which I think they took the word from.
Yeah, they did.
Because you remember the Dutch in New York City. I mean, I can't go into detail, but essentially. Hashtag not historians. Okay. So they also, there's a quote from an interview she did later. We also glued warnings across German posters in the street calling men to work in Germany. And then we'd hurried off on our bikes. So these acts were, just to be clear, like they're not Jewish, but it's still not just as dangerous. It's much more dangerous to be Jewish at this time. But if they were caught, they could easily be killed. Like they would have no qualms murdering these children.
They're sympathizers.
And they were murdering a whole lot of children at that time. So, how do we feel? It's bad.
Nazis are bad. Keep saying that. Nazis are bad people. Not German people. Nazis.
No. German people are great and not Nazis. It's the Nazis.
Exactly.
Yeah. So both girls looked very young, and Freddie especially, because she was 14 when she started this. When she would wear braids, she would look even younger. So they were less likely to be suspected. So in 1941, that commander visited their house to ask their mother if he could recruit them for the resistance group, because they were already doing stuff. So their mother gave permission and they joined the Council of Resistance, which brought them into a more coordinated effort. Oh, and this, okay, so she was 14 at this time, which means she was like 11, 12, riding on her bike.
Wow.
Handing out pamphlets. So after they agreed, that's when they found out what they were there to do, which was sabotage bridges and railway lines and learn to shoot. They learned to shoot Nazis, girl. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
At 14, 15?
At 14. And there's an interview from her sister later saying, she says, I remember my sister saying, well, that's something I've never done before. They're like,
oh my Lord.
So a couple of years after this, she became one of its armed assassins. Oh, yeah. So a Wikipedia, no, history.com says in at least one instance, Truce seduced an SS officer into the woods so that someone from the resistance could shoot him. Wikipedia tells me that they did that on the regular, that they would go to bars, like seduce a soldier, like wink, like be like, hey, boy, I love a man in uniform, you know, and he'd follow her out there and then he would be murdered. I like it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Bish.
The honeypot. Honeypot.
Yep. Mm-hmm. She knew what to do. So Freddie was the first of the girls to kill a soldier by shooting him while riding her bicycle.
Damn. Mm-hmm. She was the OG drive-by. Okay. Uh-huh. On a bicycle. Mm-hmm.
This is a positive version of that.
Wow.
They began to go on assassination missions by themselves. And then they focused on killing Dutch collaborators who arrested or endangered Jewish refugees or resistance members. Like, they were like, fuck off. They were like, stop this shit. I love her.
But they were about that life. They weren't just saying it. They were like,
no.
Yeah, we're going to have to kill some motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. Yep. This is what we're doing. Okay.
They were like, okay. There's a quote from Bas van Benda Beckham, who is a former researcher at the Netherlands Institute for War, Holocaust and Genocide Studies, that she says, they were unusual, these girls, quote her. There were a lot of women involved in the resistance of the Netherlands, but not so much in the way these girls were. There are not that many examples of women who actually shot collaborators themselves. So Freddie was especially good at following a target or keeping a lookout during missions because she looked so very young. Both sisters never revealed how many Nazis and Dutch collaborators they assassinated. According to one interview, she would say that she and her sister were soldiers and soldiers don't say. Yeah.
Gotcha.
They called them liquidations.
Damn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's a movie made about this.
I mean, right? How do we not have this movie? I would watch this movie. I would produce this movie.
Yes.
And when I was 14, I would want to play her, but I'm Jewish, so I probably wouldn't. But you know, I could, right?
Yeah, you absolutely could.
Thank you. I'm literally asking for you to say that, and you did. I appreciate it. Thank you.
That's what friends are for.
I know, right? So other things they did, they would bring Jewish refugees to a new hiding place. They would work in the emergency hospital nearby. They would rescue Jewish children from concentration camps. And they would blow up. Yeah, like that. Oh, I didn't know that. Like, that makes me cry. And they would blow up those railway lines. Yeah, they did. So in 1943, they joined forces with another young woman, Hanny Schaft. So Hanny Schaft was a former university student, and we could get into her. She has a whole other story. She dropped out of school because she refused to sign a pledge of loyalty to Germany. So the three of them became very, very good friends, and they formed a sabotage and assassination cell. In 1945, 3 weeks before the war ended, Hanny was killed by the Nazis. So, little fun fact, Hanny's last words were, this is a lore, but I like it and I'm going to go with it. Her last words were, I'm a better shot, after initially only being wounded by her executioner.
Boom. Damn, that's gangster.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So,
yes, ladies. Yes.
I mean, they're just badass murdering Nazis. They're my favorite. So after the war, the sisters dealt with the trauma of killing people and losing their best friends. So Truce created sculptures, and she spoke and wrote about their time and the resistance. I think she became an artist. And Freddie coped, quote her, by getting married and having babies. She had three kids. She married, oh my God, you know what? I didn't write it down. I don't think. A guy named Jan. Really nice guy. I don't know much about him. Anyway, they got married. They were happy.
Did they stay in their home country? Or
I think they did. I think they did.
Okay.
And you know, it was hard. Says in one of her interviews, "We did not feel it suited us. It never suits anybody unless they are real criminals." Later, there was the National Hanny Shaft Foundation, and Freddie served as a board member on it, and it was established by her sister Truce. There is a street named after Freddie. Now, both women lived until the age of 92, like Truce and Freddie. Yeah. And there's like, you can see pictures of Freddie like smiling and happy, like older. They did not get any recognition until the year 2014.
What?
Yep.
Wow.
2014. Because you want to know why?
Why?
They sidelined them as communists. That's problematic.
Yeah, it's like, it's called nuance, people.
I mean, y'all,
and also
right?
Knowledge. It's like, period was this?
I mean, come on, dude. Like, really? Okay, because there were Nazis. You know what Nazis did, right? Okay. Do you not know? Because I could tell you. There's a lot of movies
and
out there that
will tell you. It's also, like, seems like a lot of, like, revisionist history and, like, conflating the communists back then with Nazis, and it's like no.
Oh yeah, you know what? Because I'm gonna venture to say that the West in general is like, capitalist means free, other words mean evil.
It's because of the Cold War. Yeah.
And that's just that. No,
that came afterwards.
It's more complicated than that.
Yep.
So they, in 2014, they received the national recognition for their service, national recognition by receiving the, okay. So I'm nervous because I have to say these words. Okay.
Don't be nervous. Just sound it out.
All right. See, this is what I'm saying. She like calms you. Mobilisati ur lux cruis. I don't know what I said. I don't know. But it means war mobilization cross.
Okay.
And there's like a cute picture of her holding the cross, like the award, and she's smiling. But like,
aww.
I know, right? But that is my story. That is what happened.
Is she still alive or?
No, they died in, okay. So her sister died in 2018 or 2016. And she died in 2018. Listen, it's not fair because she died one day before her 93rd birthday.
Aww.
That pisses me off.
Man, can you imagine being in your 90s and being like, I killed motherfucking Nazis.
I killed those Nazis, right?
I killed those assholes. Wow. Gangsta.
And they like, you know, they still had, they had trauma from doing it.
Yeah, of course.
Murdering is bad, but you know, like,
and also being in war is bad. Like, they had to survive. Yeah. I think people who've, you know, I mean, for the most part, I mean, in the United States, we have it fairly good. It doesn't mean that people have not experienced trauma, you know, violence that's always going on. But it's nothing in comparison to living in a war zone.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
like an actual Nazis walking
around.
And
you're seeing daily,
yeah,
people getting shot on the street. Like you're seeing that, and you're seeing who's doing it.
Yep.
So the brain,
and they're in charge.
And they're in charge.
They're in charge. The people who are doing it are in charge.
And they are the problem. And so there's nothing to do. And they shot some motherfucking Nazis. You got to do what you got to do, ladies. Yes. Thank you on behalf of my people. Thank you.
Exactly. And also to have such strong convictions at such a young age, but also to go through with it. Because a lot of people do a lot of fucking talking.
Listen,
and they ain't about that business. Like,
I don't think I could do it. I just don't have the makeup, especially at that age. Like, I don't think I could.
I could.
And that's not, I'm not crediting myself for anything. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just in awe of their ability to be like, I see how that's awful and I'm going to do what I need to do.
Yeah, I could, because again, I love a murderess. But these aren't murderesses. These are heroes.
No, these are heroes.
But some motherfuckers need to be dealt with.
Right?
Listen, mm-hmm. I'm okay with killing baby Hitler. Some people need to be pushed over a ledge. I mean, some people need a little poison in their dinner. I'm okay with some of this because the world would be a better place without some of these people on it. Because they want to wreak havoc and spread evil and mayhem. And in a war zone, like if I will say that what's extraordinary in all seriousness.
Yeah.
I'm only half joking, but in all seriousness.
I don't know. Like, Armageddon happens and I'm going next to you. I'm following you.
You don't want to be with me. Like, I know all these little cute shows y'all like The Walking Dead. Listen, you get bit, I'm locking you out.
Yeah.
If I get bit, I expect you to lock me out. Ain't none of this. No. Listen.
Yeah, you and Sal are on the same wavelength. He's like, you gotta shoot me in the head. I'll be like, but I love you, baby. And he's
See,
that's the problem.
Yeah, I'm hardcore, like, because I'm like, it's simple. Like, why are we complicating things? Like, zombies are out to bite us. Like, why is this complicated? I don't understand. I'm so glad I wasn't born like back in the day. And it was like you see these historical dramas about monarchs. Like, one of my favorite is Elizabeth. And I'm like, I would kill everybody. Like, kill them. Like,
yeah.
It's not as a rigmarole. Like, but I'm also a softie. Like, I love, like, I believe in protecting the weak, protecting the innocent. You know,
you would aggressively make a lot of good sense. Like, I'm wishy-washy and that I shouldn't that job.
Because some motherfuckers, listen, I've grown, I have a lot more empathy now, but it is very, very simple. Like, if you are an evil person, you should get your comeuppance. I'm not about this, let's pray about it. And, you're going to get yours. You're going to go to hell. I want you to get hell on earth. Okay.
I am with you on that. Like, as I said, these young ladies shot the Nazis. And I'm like, yes.
Boom. And that's what I'm saying. They're saying it in front of their faces. And I'm impressed with their bravery because they were so young. Yes. They couldn't possibly know the emotional ramifications. Because, like, I mean, I kid, but obviously killing someone, even if they deserve it or evil,
is hard. Yeah.
It's going to be hard. And you're going to need some, you know, some deep, deep therapy and counseling.
Yeah. And I think one of them talks about how, like, there was one she shot and was like suffering on the ground and her instinct was to go help him because she's a human and she's not a monster, you know, like,
right.
But it's like, this was the greater good. And they saw on the daily, the horrificness. I mean, if they were rescuing children from concentration camps, then they saw concentration camps.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
They understood what was happening.
He's bleeding on the ground, but I'm sure he shot some child.
Yeah. So fuck
him. Or some
him.
Old person because he's, and I know they're like, he's following orders.
Don't give a shit.
Yeah. But
I don't give a shit.
Like, if your orders are to round up people, take them from their homes, take all their possessions, send them to work camps and death camps, strip them of all their humanity, take out the gold out of their teeth after you kill them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm okay with killing you. I'm just saying. I'm okay with that.
Death seems right to me. I might be biased, but I think, like, I'm biased on the face of humanity. You know what I'm saying? Like, based on the fact that humanity, they should die. All right.
Yeah, but it's just so impressive that they didn't just look around, because it sounds like they would have been kind of fine. I can't imagine people who are living in that society, who aren't gung-ho about what's happening, are completely fine, but they could have been, sounds like they could have been fine, but they didn't put their head in the sand. They were like, we're going to do something about
it.
They're
heroes. We should all be talking about them.
Yeah, that's amazing. And what's her name again? Freddie
Overstegen.
Overstegen.
Yes. It's probably like Overstegen. I'm so sorry. Something like that. Which is amazing.
Completely amazing. Like, it's about, you know, this podcast is all about like women choosing their lives. You know, some choose, make the wrong decisions, and some make, you know, great decisions today. You know, we had one who was, you know, forced into making a decision and kind of internalized what she had been taught. And so unfortunately wasn't able to find free, you know, actual like full acceptance of herself. And then it sounds like one is like, oh no, this is wrong. I'm gonna do something about it.
I'm gonna murder some Nazis. Yeah.
And live to be in her 90s.
Yes. That's such a beautiful story. Such an interesting day.
I know, right? I like, and these motherfuckers around here, like, I can't wear a mask. and these teenagers are killing fucking Nazis. And the people are like, oh, I don't want to get a vaccine. Because I want to cough all over you.
Is your mask choking you? Is it really choking you? Okay. All right.
You know, I saw an article saying that good looking people are the ones who want to not wear a mask. I'm like, no, that's not right.
True. Not true. No. 100% a lie. I have so much proof. So much proof. Anyways.
Because most of the motherfuckers I see like demanding that they talk, trying to talk all in your face are the ones who really should cover up their faces. They
Those are the people that get so close to you that you know how ugly they truly are. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no question. Anyways.
Yeah, I know. Well, guys, that wraps it up for another episode of Notorious Women Podcast. Guys, remember to subscribe, like, and share our podcast with anyone you think who might like this. Also, our Patreon is back up. So
Our Patreon is up. I wrote a song about it. That was the song. I hope you liked it.
So if you guys want to support this show, you want to donate, you can do it for as little as $2 a month. We have different tiers. So just go to patreon.com and search for Notorious Women. And that's patreon.com/Notorious Women. You may have to just go in and put in like do a search. But
go to Patreon. We're there. We're cute.
And we'd love to have, if you want to support us, it'll break down like what you get for different tiers, and we'll have like extra content behind the scenes, and, you know, some of which will be like, we usually chit chat a little bit before we start recording.
Yeah.
So you'll get access to that and just extra stuff. We'll talk about like, TV shows we're watching, or like just kind of, you know, our little spiel, but
rants, but etc.
Exactly. Miriam, do you want to tell them where they can also find us on socials?
Because we're on IG, Notorious Women Podcast. Please come, please play. We have so many conversations that sometimes I need your help, right? Because I feel like if you're listening to this podcast, you could be helpful. There are these men who see these reels and think that I need their opinion. All right. And then Gmail is notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. That's notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. Send us thoughts, ideas. We love to hear them.
Yes. All right, guys. And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.